Hello and welcome to the True Faith Podcast. My name is Michael Martin, gobshite and former chief of this fanzine, and I'm in the Palace of Municipal Socialism, that is Gateshead Civic Centre, with none other than Gateshead's own MP, the Right Honourable Ian Means. I have to say, he doesn't look that honourable, like he's just come in his shorts. We're here to talk about Ian's role in the all-party parliamentary committee on for football fans and a load of other stuff related to politics and football, which I know will have a few of you switching off, but I would urge you to keep listening because, in the words of Alf Garnett, you might learn something. Ian, welcome. I know you've been a long-standing Newcastle supporter because I've spotted you at matches for many, many years, home and away. And it doesn't just end with Newcastle. You've been a doughty defender of Gateshead Football Club over the years and had quite a bit to do with the supporters club, etc. So I think it's fair to say Ian is a genuine football lad and he is a Gateshead boy and he's the MP. But more than that, what's your exact title, Ian, for the all-party?
It's the all-party parliamentary group for football supporters, which we established just under 2 years ago. And, you know, it is all-party, but there was an existing football group within Parliament. But that seemed to me to be looking after the interests of clubs, the hierarchy, you know, the governance of football in terms of district and county and national FAs and leagues. And I thought it was actually interesting to try and establish something for the paying customer, the football fan, you know, and look after their interests. So we took on board the services of the Football Supporters Federation, who act as the secretariat, and we now have meetings usually about once a term. You know, we've looked at a whole range of issues over the last 2 years, including things like safe standing, but also ticket pricing for away fans. And, you know, there have been some successful campaigns which helped, I think the group that we established helped to bring that to fruition in terms of the 20s Plenty campaign. And I know it wasn't an absolute success, but, you know, the £30 restriction now on ticket pricing for away fans in the Premier League is certainly a welcome boost compared to the sort of money that we used to play to go to places like Chelsea, Tottenham and Manchester United in the past. So, you know, I think that's been a success. And the fact that there are parliamentarians on board gives an organisation like the Football Supporters Federation more clout with the governance of the game, Premier League, FA, etc.
Thanks for that. So it's been going for 2 years. In my recent past, I used to go along to a few committee meetings, etc. But it felt to me a bit like too much like being at work. So I've managed to knock that on the head now. So Ian, it's got, you know, yourself on board. It's got connections with the Football Supporters Federation and it's influenced some notable successes with the 20s Plenty or 30s Dirty, if you like. Where are the key areas of interest now for the group?
Well, I think it's the one thing that we've started to focus on now is safe standing, you know, safe standing in football grounds. You know, from my perspective, I did remain to be convinced about it, having had, you know, not been a very tall bloke, a bit rough experiences on terraces in the past, you know, not being able to see, being squashed, crushed, etc. And I did remain to be convinced, but actually having looked at the real seating engineered solution, that seems to me to be a solution that might well work. It's been experimented in Scotland, certainly in Germany, it has been a success in some grounds. And I think that would be a solution to the problem which commonly exists, and we know what it is if you go to a ground as an away fan, invariably, doesn't matter what league you're in, away fans are standing in certain seating areas. And that isn't inherently safe because, unfortunately, you know, the seat in front of you becomes a trip hazard when everybody is standing. And, you know, I haven't seen an awful lot of injuries, but I've seen some situations in football grounds where people have actually fallen over the seats in front and not dreadfully hurt themselves, but it could have been a lot worse than it actually ended up being.
I think that's definitely right, and I also think it's in home areas as well. I think we've all experienced that, and despite our current position this season. We have had moments of high excitement at St James's Park. Moving on, just on the kind of last thing to say about safe standing, you know, well, I've been interested in it for a number of years, and I'm sure a lot of listeners have as well. Where do you see it happening, Ian? Do you see 2 years, 3 years for real seating to be introduced at Premier League and Championship grounds?
Well, I mean, Tottenham's ground is under construction. I know they're late getting into it, but apparently real seating has been fitted, you know, in the new ground there. Now, it will be seating when the ground opens later this month, early next month, but it is there to be converted into safe standing, real seated safe standing in the future. So I can actually see pilots taking off, and you know, I think the way in which some football supporters treated Tracy Crouch, the sports minister, was a bit unfortunate, to say the least. You know, and she did take a bit of a battering. She's a Tottenham fan. She did remain to be convinced. But I actually think with our all party group putting pressure on, I think Tracy might allow pilots to take place in Premiership grounds in the first instance. So, you know, if Tottenham, for instance, have got that engineered solution built in, why couldn't Tottenham be a pilot to see how it goes? But I think that there's a real potential for it happening within the next 2 to 3 years in different parts of the country. Now, the problem that we have is, in Scotland, the Celtic experiment literally substitutes one standing place for one sitting place. So it's an expense for the clubs, which doesn't bring any additional financial reward from their perspective. In Germany, an awful lot of the grounds there do 1.5 people standing for every sitting place that they're occupying, so that they can get more people into particular areas. But in the Celtic experiment, it's 3,000 for 3,000. So I think we might have to look at that and see what incentive we can then give to the clubs to bring in the standing areas. I think the biggest incentive, of course, though, is the fact that fans want to stand. Fans are standing. Fans are regularly getting into arguments and disagreements with club stewards in grounds around the country, and in an awful lot of places, clubs and the stewards have just given up and just allow it. But it does need to be safe.
And where would your preference be to see it at St James's Park?
I think the Gallagher corner would seem to be an obvious choice, but also there's the singing area, which seems to be put into a strange place in the sort of in the southwest corner of the Gallagher end. I think the centre of the Gallagher end behind the goal would be a good place to have a look as well.
I agree. I think ideally, at some point in the future, I'd like to see it the whole of the Gallagher, given those options, and maybe a premium put on younger fans going in there, and maybe we'll have something like the boys' end that there used to be approached to go into the match when I started going, which was you traditionally went in the Leasers and the Gallagher, and hopefully this would be safer and all the rest of it. So moving on, and thanks for that overview of how the parliamentary group works, Ian. Some time ago, I was quite interested in what was in the Labour Party's manifesto in 2015 and 2017 with regards to the governance of football, and particularly football clubs. I don't think it's letting any secret out the bag to say that there are a number of clubs, including our own, who have a serious problem with the ownership and direction and the stewardship that individuals provide for very well-cherished and loved local institutions. Ian, can I ask you about the manifesto, and do you think it'll go into the next Labour Party manifesto?
Well, the manifesto in 2017 hardly changed from the manifesto in 2015, and I wouldn't see any reason why the Labour leadership at the moment would change that or water it down. And what it would bring about would be fans' representatives on boards of directors. I think it might be problematical where there aren't effectively any boards of directors. Like, you know, in our own club, there isn't an effective board of directors there. It's in the ownership of a single individual, and we've only seen just this week Arsenal being bought out by Stan Kroenke, who was basically a franchise holder in a number of different sports in the United States and here in Britain. So what we don't want to see is an expansion of the single individual who own and govern football clubs, treating them as a franchise, a sports franchise. Just knowing that, with particularly TV revenues being at the level that they are, that it's a milk cow, and you know what the fans put through the gate is just a way of actually increasing the revenue and increasing the bottom line, which is the profit margin for the owner at the end of the season.
So if we haven't got a board of directors and all the rest of it, I don't expect to see government moving to nationalise football clubs at any time in the future by buying controlling shares in them and converting them to the model that we've got in Germany. Where do you see that that commitment going in terms of making it real for fans and them being able to exert some control over the football clubs that ultimately they own in a very moral way?
Yeah, well, the Labour Party manifesto talks about having a couple of fan representatives on boards of directors. They would be democratically elected by the fan base, you know, the membership of the club, you know, the season ticket holders probably in the first instance. And, you know, from my perspective, you know, those people should be up for election on an annual basis. And you know, they can then exert pressure onto a board of directors, you know. It's an opportunity for the fans' views to be heard within the boardroom of the football club. It's not a perfect solution to the problems which currently exist, but it would allow fan voices to be heard, but also it would allow fans to report back to the fan base about what the thinking of the directors is, if there is any thinking there at all, other than just mainly running it as a business, as we've seen here in the northeast of England.
Well, the thing is, it's all very well to say that fans will have a line of communication with the owner or whoever. If I kind of look very specifically at Newcastle United, the owner won't talk to anybody. You know, he's very dismissive of any kind of criticism, and I wondered whether or not there was any mileage in offering a licensing system so that there are certain preconditions that football clubs have got to meet, so that for them to maintain the license or have that withdrawn from the people that own that club, in order to move away from this kind of what could some people listening could believe was a little bit of tokenism.
Yeah. Well, I entirely agree with that. I mean, there's no point in having fans on boards unless they can exert some measure of sway in the boardroom, and therefore to back that up, there would have to be some sort of legislation to say, you know, there will be some ground rules, some minimum requirements that football clubs would have to adhere to. And I think the thinking of the Labour Party on that is that, you know, football clubs are not like any other business. You know, without the fans, they would become nothing. You know, the television revenue which comes in because these clubs play in front of full stadiums week in, week out. That's what creates a large part of the excitement. And I think there's got to be some recognition of the value that fans add to the clubs that they support, not just in terms of the stands, not just in terms of the revenue coming through the gate, but also their value in terms of a marketable entity when it comes to the world of television.
Thanks, Ian. Just moving on now very specifically to Newcastle United. This week, Lee Charnley was unavailable to attend the fans forum. Lots of people, myself included, have asked where Lee was on Tuesday night and why he couldn't attend. What was more important to him than to speak to supporters after a summer of huge disappointment and a feeling that our manager, one of the world's best coaches, is probably now on his way out of the club, and that will probably cause a bit of disaffection amongst players, certainly amongst supporters. So Lee Charnley can just decide to walk away from the forum and cancel it at his will. So just moving into the area of Newcastle United and representation and all the rest of it, Where do you see the key problems being at our football club, Ian?
Well, the key problem at the football club, from my perspective, is the ownership of Mike Ashley, and I'm afraid to say that I regard Mike Ashley's ownership of the club as kind of a cancer, which is eating the heart out of the club. It's not just actually eating the heart out, the physical heart of the club. It's actually eating away at the mental well-being of the club. You know, the club as an entity, you know, now seems to be where we've got fans kind of in disagreement with each other about the best way forward, and it's, you know, I suppose it's a typical divide and conquer tactics by an ownership who really just wants to have a quiet life, spend very little money on the club and reap the benefits from what the television revenues and the very loyal supporter base will bring in. And you know, there's no doubt about it, Newcastle will be profitable. But it really does sadden me to see a situation where I don't want to actually go and buy any Newcastle merchandise, because I know that the money generated by that merchandise is not actually going to support the entity that is Newcastle United. It's going straight into the pockets and directors of Sports Direct, and that's very, very sad. We see the naming rights of the stadium. You know, this, you know, it's not the Sports Direct Arena anymore. It's still St James's Park, but the place is completely and utterly covered with Sports Direct advertising, which brings no revenue to the club whatsoever. It's just free advertising for Mike Ashley and his business concerns.
There seems to have been a bit of a sea change amongst supporters who've been, I don't know what it is, whether or not we've been lacking in kind of gumption, organisation. We seem to be a group of fans that can find any amount of ways to disagree with each other, even though the big picture remains the same and we all are focused on that. There does seem to be a change now, though, in terms of different groups setting up, and we've had two home games running where there's been a demonstration outside of Sports Direct, which we know is bad for Sports Direct's lamentable PR as it is, but other things planned, and I get the sense that I hope that that campaign is maturing and becoming more sophisticated. Ian, what's your view on the new fans movement and the protests against the ownership?
Well, I'm glad to see that the sort of stoicism which Newcastle supporters have kind of displayed for quite a long time now under Ashley's ownership seems to be, going to a certain extent, and that fans are actually starting to exert their voice. I mean, the way in which the club is run really, really disappoints me. I mean, as a customer, I mean, the new ticket website is just utterly dreadful. You know, the previous ticket website wasn't brilliant, but this one is so clunky, so clumsy. It takes ages and ages to buy tickets for home games, away games. You know, I've had a situation today where my friends and family group, for instance, I had to have the ages and the dates of birth of the people, otherwise it wouldn't let me buy an adult ticket for these people, because the computer system didn't know what age bracket these people were in, even though they've got adult season tickets. It's bonkers, you know, and it just seems to me they go for the cheapest of everything, the nastiest of everything. And sadly, I think the one thing I would say is, you know, the poor staff of the club get the backlash. I mean, the club is run dreadfully, you know. I mean, you wouldn't run an opera house, you know, like this, but I mean, people are paying as much to go and see Newcastle United as they would pay to go and see an opera at the Royal Opera House in London, and are treated like cattle, very, very poorly indeed. I'm glad that, you know, supporter groups are now voicing their opinions, but I still do feel that the bulk of Newcastle United supporters, it will in a sort of stoic fashion just accept what is handed over to them. And I hope that's not the case, because we really do need to get rid of this dreadful cancer of the ownership of Mike Ashley from the club.
I think we'll end on that note, Ian, because I think that sums up a lot of feelings of the rank and file of support. Thanks very much for your time. I really appreciate it, and hopefully there's good times to come.
Thank you very much.